You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favourite shows from. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke, Jonathan Breyer, and Gary Riley.
Hello, everyone. Welcome along to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. It's Series 9, Episode 22 coming your way this week. Hope you enjoyed the sun over the weekend. It's back to the rain today, I'm afraid. But we're recording early in the week. We're recording on Monday night. It is, of course, FAI Cup weekend coming up, the second round of the Cup. This is where the League of Ireland teams come into the competition. Will we get some Cup upsets, or will it be League of Ireland dominance over the non-league sides yet again this year? We'll talk about those games a little bit later on. Of course, we're going to look back on what happened on Friday night. It was a reduced set of fixtures in the Premier Division. We had two games Friday. We had one very important game on Saturday, Sligo-Derry. We'll talk about that in a little while. And there's some interesting results in the First Division at the weekend. Bray Wanderers beating Dundalk, but Cove missing the chance to capitalise. So lots to go through in our usual results roundup. And we've got two brilliant guests coming your way this week. We have got the new chairman of Athlone Town, Nick Giannotti, joining us on the podcast. We're the first ones he's going to speak to since taking up the position there at Athlone. And we're going to speak to Castlebar's manager, Stevie Galvin, former Longford Town player as well. He's going up against his old side in the FAI Cup this weekend. As ever, we're brought to you by Quinn AV. Check out quinnav.ie for all your sound lighting and AV solutions. And I'm sure Anthony, our sponsor, is really looking forward to hearing from Nick later on the show. But Gary, will dive headfirst into it. And we're going to go Waterford against Cork from Friday. I was watching this one on LOI TV Friday night. Waterford 2, Cork City 0. Combine the Sligo result on Saturday into the equation, and you'd have to think Cork's time in the Premier Division is coming to an end, and very quickly.
Seems there's a strong inevitability to it at the moment. They're just not up to it at all. And as you said, coupled with the result on Saturday for Sligo Rovers, a fantastic result for them. I think it's terminal at this point. They're 8 points off Sligo in the playoff position, and I think the way Sligo are going, they're looking into Galway or Waterford ahead of them, rather than being too concerned about Cork behind them. Another poor enough performance from Cork, littered with mistakes at the back again. It's just bizarre stuff, the way that they're proceeding with this, you know, playing out from the back without even looking at what's in front of you. Like, if you look at that first goal there on Friday night, it's just chaotic stuff, and then no one reacted to it as well either. Do you know what I mean? Like, who scored that goal?
The first one for Waterford. Oh, Jesus, you put me on the spot. I get the goal score in a second. But what I was going to say, if you look at my Twitter, my own personal account from Friday night, as I said, I was watching
this.
I was watching this on LOI TV, and 13 minutes into the game, I tweeted something along the lines of, the game is 13 minutes old, and the amount of basic errors the Cork City defence has made already, or I think schoolboy defender might have been the term I used. They got away with a few ropey passes out from the back before the concession of that first goal. And I know there was a couple of appeals for it being a foul. It was Glenfield that got the goal. There was appeals that maybe he fouled the Cork City player, but I don't want to hear about that, because Cork put themselves in that position. Absolute, as you said, sheer madness. And even after the concession of that goal, kept trying to play out from the back, bringing pressure on themselves. Crazy stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I could definitely coach an under 15 team to go and press the Cork back line with the stupidity that they're doing. Like, and like, the balls that they're playing out are pure hospital passes that are nearly all 50-50s at best. Like, that for the goal, like, if you look back on it on the highlights, there was Glenfield was right on top of the Cork player. He doesn't do half enough to try and protect the ball, and the idea that there's a foul is just bullshit. But that pass was never on. And then the two centre defenders are just watching the ball being kicked by them. Like, they don't go out and close down properly. A stupid attempt at a block. It's just cat stuff. Like, and no attempt. Like, there's no, what glory is there in going, oh, we're playing a certain way, so we're going to go down like this. Like, there's no virtue in that. There's no glory in that. As you, you know, we were talking before we started, and like with, you were saying that Cork were, you know, somewhat dangerous going forward, but it's, you know, it's like my Longford Shells famous pre-season game. It's, you do go on about the Sligo and Cork one earlier on in the season. They have to score a heap of goals to get anything out of games. They're not capable of defending. So I think it's only one way traffic here for Cork down into the first division next year.
Yeah, I mean, just so many problems all over the pitch. The only two players that looked anywhere threatening for them going forward were Dyke Steele and Kit Nelson. Maguire was a shadow of himself. Bulger went off injured early on. I thought we spoke recently about the new Sligo players going straight in for that game against Shamrock Rovers and having an instant impact. Ryan O'Kane, he played so well. McManus in midfield. They had another debutant, Paddy McLean, who I spoke to for the Members Club last week ahead of the Derry game, and he went and scored against his hometown team. Those players have all had instant impacts. Cork didn't blood a lot of those new players in the first game that they could have. They kept them on the bench, but they blooded the likes of Keller here. I thought he looked very poor. Again, he has been asked to be a ball-playing centre-half. He doesn't look like the type of player that's built for that. Now, Feely got some positive kind of comments on his performance, but I didn't really see much in him myself, to be honest. And the goalkeeper, Ademuso, while he probably couldn't do much about either of the goals, there was one where he got away with it. He came out and he absolutely poleaxed a Waterford player. I can't remember who it was. Only for the offside flag went up, he would have been sent off. So
yeah, he would have been, yeah.
Would have been a nightmare debut for him. So those players have come in, haven't had the impact that the Sligo signings have had. And now they're without Bulger again. Maguire looks a shadow of himself, as I said. They're still without Rory Keating. We spoke about it when we were doing the pre-season pods and the previews, that they were going to be relying on those three players. And those three players have checkered enough recent injury records.
Yeah.
And at the moment, you know, the next game that they play, they might have none of those players available. So,
Next game that they're playing...
Can't stop a bus at the back, can't score goals. It's just an absolute shambles.
Yeah, no, there's no question about that. And the next game that they're playing is Sligo in Turner's Cross. Mm. Like with the...
That might be their only saving grace. If they win that, then they're still 5 points behind. You know, I think the results the weekend, I think you're right. I think it's terminal.
I think it's terminal. And I don't see them getting anything against Sligo. The way, like, Sligo have been building for the last couple of weeks at least. And as you mentioned, they've brought in players that have made impacts. And they're going to go down to Turner's Cross. It's already in a mess.
Yeah. That's the fear now. And I think I actually got a message. I'll see. Can I find it here from I won't name the Cork City fan that got in touch, but he sent me a DM on Saturday morning after the footage came out. Of course, we've all seen it. That some Cork City fans going out onto the pitch and confronting players and staff. There's obviously no place for that. That's unacceptable. But we've talked about it for a while that we could sense that it was. We didn't really use the word, but we were kind of getting there. It's going toxic.
Yeah.
And there's absolutely no doubt now that is the only word to describe the situation at Cork City. I'll just read this message out. Actually, I've just found it here. Again, I won't name the Twitter user that got in touch, but he started saying, great win for ye tonight, Longford Town, but we are in a woeful state down here. I'm 22 years following City. Season ticket with 14 years. Have only missed one game all year out of 20-something. I've seen some brutal City teams. Even 2021 First Division team was shite, but there was still a connection and a love for the team, and we didn't even make the playoffs. You've probably seen things got ugly last night in Waterford, but my fear is things are going to get a lot worse. People here are boiling. No doubt we're gone, but I fear if Sligo beat us at home, which I think they will, where do we go from here? Rumours starting to circulate about the owner, this man says. I don't know about that, but he says, what a lot of fans see is... will buy the first division but won't spend the required amount of money to stay in the Premier. When you come up, you need proper, tough, old school lads to keep you up, not a bunch of lone kids.
Yeah, that's very fair. And even like you look back on when Neil Fenn Julie got them relegated a few years ago, there was a lot of lone lads in that side.
Yeah.
And you need shithouses. You know, you look up, I'm not saying like...
Well, look, I think a great example, and I wasn't sure about him coming back. Well, Paddy McLean to Sligo Rovers. I know he's only played two games, but he was excellent against Shamrock Rovers, and he scored the other night against Derry, two of the top teams in the league. He's been in the league. He's been in the club before. It can be a bit of a bullshit cliche that, oh, he knows the club.
Yeah, but, it is a bullshit cliche.
Yeah, yeah. But at the same time, and I spoke to their assistant before that Derry game as well for the members club, and I spoke about, you know, Ryan O'Kane, okay, hasn't played much football this season, Michelle's, but he knows the league. He's been in it with Dundalk. Likewise with McLean, he's been playing up north. It's, you know, kind of old school,
yeah,
rough and tumble kind of league. He's the sort of player you'd think, yeah, you know, he's the sort of boy who will roll his sleeves up for a relegation fight. McManus, he's been playing 12, 13 games for Bowes in the Premier Division this season. Those players go in, they're ready to go. Whereas some of these players that Cork are bringing in, they're going to take weeks to get fully match fit, and they don't have that type of time.
No. Absolutely. The time to bring them in was 6 months ago, yeah, if at all. They'd really don't, they're running out of options. As I said, I think it is completely terminal.
Yeah, so do I.
One thing, like, would say, like, from that messenger, from that fan, and we referenced it probably 3 or 4 pods ago, how many Cork cities have there been since, we'll say, if we just, let's say, play the game that, yeah, this is the same Cork city since 1984. There's been a heap of clubs in that time for only a club, you know, for an entity that's around, we'll say, 40 years. So there seems to be, they can't get it right.
No. And that just to, there's obviously,
like, we're not kicking the man when he's down. You know what I mean? Like,
I was just going to say, there's obviously a pylon taking place now for Dermot Usher at the moment. And the fan that got in touch there referenced that there's a feeling, oh, he'll go down and buy the first division, but won't put the money in when you get to the Premier Division. It's just not that handy. I know they're a well-supported club, and I think he's totally got it wrong with the ticket, and I think that was the first mistake of the season.
Yeah.
Even if they were top of the league, I think that would leave a sour taste in the mouth. But whatever, bumping down the bottom and paying that money to go and watch your team, no, that's just not a runner. We've been talking about it for ages, you know, the wage inflation, the league, you're looking at the money that Derry and Shamrock Rovers are spending. I think Cork fans at the same time need to have a bit of a reset of expectations. We've seen this before, that they come down into the first division, they go straight back up, and straight away they're thinking they're almost entitled to be pushing for Europe. What Cork need is steady progression. And, you know, if they finish ninth this season and win a playoff, finish eighth or seventh the next year, that's the sort of building mission they need to go on. There always seems to be this kind of grand illusion that, oh, you know, we go up and we'll be fifth or sixth and push for Europe, but it's just not going to be that handy.
But they lost the playoff against Waterford, what, in at the end of 2023?
Yeah.
Like, that was such a why in the road for them. You know, it could have been so different. You know, a year, you stay up by the skin of your teeth, and then you can push on and build on again, knowing what you kind of a bit more of an understanding maybe of what you need to do. But I think, like, you know, I saw some posts and shite online about, oh, we need a director of football and we need all of this stuff. I don't...
Should have had Liam Buckley as what, sporting director or whatever title he had, and how long did that last?
Yeah. Well, he took over, didn't he?
Well, he was manager. Oh, well, no, he was the sporting director or whatever first, and then he was, and it was, oh no, he definitely won't be the manager, and then he was the manager.
Exactly, yeah.
And then he couldn't go back into the other job, although I think he did for a small while. But there's no getting away from the owner has made a lot of mistakes.
He has, but like I think the main point of it is, like, all of that would be irrelevant if he was spending a heap of money on the playing team. You know, that might keep them up or keep them further up the table. But as you said, it's not that handy to get that right. He's probably spending big enough money on the like a Maguire and Keating. Balder probably too. They're not cheap additions to a squad. So I don't think it's...
It's clear what quite... I think it's fair to say quite a sizable portion of the fan base seem to want now is they want the owner to leave. But have they thought about have they thought about what comes next? Because the only reason he really took over the club because it was on its feckin' knees again.
Yeah, that's the point. Yeah, exactly. It was on a version of life support.
Yeah.
So to look for him to go. But who's going to come in? Who's going to come in with an ass load of money? You know, it's like that line about most things, really. How do you become a millionaire in football? You start off as a billionaire.
Yeah.
You know, like it's particularly in the League of Ireland. It's not as if you're going to win a Champions League or anything like that. That might, you know, fill a gap somewhere.
But with that in mind, it'll be interesting to hear from Nick Giannotti later on in the show, the new Athlone chairman. Like, I just don't understand why you'd want to buy a League of Ireland club, because as you said, you're just going to chuck money down a hole, really.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, look, we can all burn money, but like, you can really put a match to money in the League of Ireland. So, I don't like just on
get,
Cork
and get lots of hate for it too on the back of it. You know,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, like if he decides that, you know, at the end of the season, right, I've enough of this shit and enough heard. I've lost me, or I've spent a bag of money on this, and I'm only getting grief. No matter what I do it wrong. Even if that's not necessarily the case, you know, but everybody around him or down there says that he's doing everything wrong. So he tries to sell it. And then what? Who's going to come in?
Mm.
You know, all that shit with Trevor Hemmings?
Trevor Hemmings, yeah. The late Trevor Hemmings.
Yeah. Like, that only came about because, what, the Forest Co-op, wasn't it? Was it? Am I missing the timeline here? What am I talking about if I don't know the timeline? But yeah, like, look, we've seen this episode many times before, even with this version of Cork City. I don't really know how it goes on from here, which is mad when you consider the fan base. You know, you're in Ireland's second city and you don't really have much competition. I don't know how they're doing it so wrong.
Yeah, bad times for Cork City. Final word on this game, we didn't speak much about Waterford, really. One thing we did speak about last week was the goalkeeping situation there, because Young McMullen got dropped after the mistake in Talla. Bradley Wade came in, ex-Cork City goalkeeper, and then conceded 7 against Derry, although I don't think he could do anything about the 7 goals. But we wondered what John Coleman would do. He put McMullen back in, and he actually had a very, very good game. He made some good saves in the match, so... I think that was probably a good bit of management to take the young lad out of the firing line for a week. Aside from that, though, I wasn't overly impressed with Waterford. I certainly wasn't impressed with the standard of the football compared to what I watched the weekend previous, Sligo Rovers, Shamrock Rovers, and what a brilliant game that was. And I know every game can't be like that, but I found this to be a rather low quality affair. I think most other teams in the league would have probably beaten Waterford on the night. That's not to take away from Waterford. They had a job to do. They had to bounce back from the 7-2. They've done it. They've moved themselves closer to safety. But you can probably see why they're in the lower reaches of the table.
Yeah, there's a good bit of limitation in that team at the moment.
I think if you took Amund out of it, like, you'd be in serious trouble.
Yes.
But look, that goes, you know, if you take
the best player out of any team.
Exactly, you take Graham Burke out of Rovers. Yeah, exactly. But no, look, 2-0 Waterford, job done, move on. Bowes 3, Galway 0. We've been speaking about this Galway drop-off for a good few weeks now. They're just conceding goals you'd never expect them to concede previously. But for Bowes, look, we have to give them credit. This is the sort of game they would have dropped points in the before, but they got the job done and keep the pressure on as best they can.
Yeah, what can you say? They're motoring on. There's no question about it. They've been very, I don't want to say, I'm not sure about consistent, but it's just a really great patch for them at the moment. You know what I mean? Like, everything, a lot of stuff is coming off for them. They're defending well. Good time to play Galway probably too. But, you know, still Bowes created lots of chances. Might be probably disappointed that they went in not like tying the game at the break, but great for my friend Michael James to get his goal on his debut as well. So it's like right after the halftime break, so they kind of got it out of their system and probably comfortable enough throughout the game, just not at it, really.
No, just on the first goal, brilliant strike from Douglas James Taylor, and it's a great pass from Keane Byrne into him, who was with Galway early. He was with Galway early in the season, wasn't he? On loan, he's back at Bowes now.
Yeah.
But like, Keane Byrne was invited to just step forward over halfway line, do what he wanted, pick his head up. He plays a really good pass into Douglas James Taylor, and then DJT just gets on the turn, and there's no pressure on him, and he gets a lovely clean strike away, and it beats the goalkeeper. But again, that's the sort of thing that you would never expect to see from Galway. you'd expect someone to be pressing Burn there. And as soon as it goes into Douglas James Taylor, you'd either expect him to be someone closing him down or someone just go in and wipe him out. You'd never expect
straight through the back of him.
Yeah. You'd never expect him to be able to turn and just hit it at will like that.
Well, that was it. It was like we've never heard, seen, or know anything about this lad before. As you mentioned, Burn goes a good journey into the Galway half. No one presses. Douglas James Taylor is like wide open, as you said, gets his turn and absolutely smashes it into the bottom corner. A really, really good finish. But it is Cat defending. Really, apart from like bad defending, it's just a real lack of awareness of danger. You know, like they're not. You know, it's just so careless. I think is the major problem here. And also there was a few passages of play where like the defender was just weak as shit.
The two Clark goals are almost identical.
Yeah, but like the way he breaks challenges. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like if you look back there, even he had a chance. That I think was saved. It started off from a pure hospital pass right across the pitch, was intercepted and he was set away, and he just breaks the challenge and there's a lad falling just all spread out on the floor what can I do about it? And even then there's no real challenge on him. The keeper has to bail out Galway. So excuse me. It's just not good enough. There's this softness. There's this kind of. We don't know what we're doing. Not don't know what we're doing, but it's no one taking real ownership in this Galway team at the minute. And no one standing up and going, right, I'm going to stop this cross. I'm going to stop this shot. I'm going to do any of those things. There's no real kind of bodies on the line type job. Very disappointing from a Galway's perspective, and they were well bet on the night.
And then on Saturday night, I think this was the big story of the weekend in the Premier Division, Sligo Rovers 2, Derry City nil. I did predict a Sligo win last week. You went for a draw. It's amazing. Neither of us were confident that Derry would win this, despite the fact they won 7-2 the week before. And I spoke about that on the pod last week when we were previewing this game. I said, people were running away with themselves after Derry scored 7. Last season, Derry hammered Waterford a couple of times. I think Patrick Hoopin scored 2 hat-tricks against Waterford last season. We've seen this before. They almost have that flat-track bully element to them at times. Now, I know they've beaten some of the top teams recently. Well, they beat top teams, and maybe not in terms of form, but they beat Pats recently, didn't they? And they beat Shells. I know they're not having vintage seasons, but there were still respectable results. But when it comes to the crunch, the clutch moment, this Derry team are still found wanting.
That's exactly it. It's an opportunity for them to do something. and like I said it last week, Sligo are a bit of a bogey team for them, but also Sligo are in a very low ebb at the minute. Not very low ebb.
Certainly on the rise.
They're on the rise, but it hasn't been a fantastic season, and it's going to be a bit of a rescue job no matter what way you slice it. But still, Derry weren't able to capitalise on their own recent good form and were well bet on the night. 2-0 at half time is just not good enough. And, it's always that kind of feeling that you have. Yeah, they're gonna fill the togs at some point.
Yeah.
But really strong, great result for Sligo. Thought Maher was dire for the second goal, obviously. Doesn't take control of the situation and really good stuff.
Even the first goal, statuesque defending from the whole lot of them.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. The ball comes in and it's just kind of, one man jumps and bang, job done. It's very easy stuff. It's just we'll be happy to play them every week. Same old yarn from Derry playing against Sligo. Any messages there?
No, just
Wi-Fi down again. Internet
just
on
check under these sheets. No sign. Just check under this cup. No, can't nothing. See anything. Nothing to be found.
Well, I'll be here next week as well, guys. So hopefully, pull it out of the fire then.
into the first division, and this was the big result of the night in the second tier. Bray Wanderers 2, Dundalk 0. Jimmy Corcoran, ex-Dundalk goalkeeper, had an inspired night. Dundalk missed a hat load of chances, particularly Dean Ebbe. We've spoken about him a good bit on the pod recently.
Yeah, he had a few, yeah, he was bad. But go on.
Yeah, but Bray 2-0 winners, I was just going to say. Now, the penalty looked outside the box to me. But look, they probably should have won the game in Oriel earlier in the season. They conceded a late equaliser, Bray, when they had 10 men that night. So they'll feel that this is a result they were due, despite the fact that Dundalk missed absolutely bucket loads of chances.
Yeah, but that's going to be a case, like, do you know what I mean? Like, that's going to happen.
They haven't been clinical or ruthless all season, Dundalk.
No, that's exactly it.
They were last week against Kerry, but we'll get to them in a few minutes.
We will. like, I have to say, just on the penalty, I think you're right. I think there's actual daylight between that challenge and the penalty area. So I think that was a poor decision.
Max Murphy's 7th penalty scored this season. He's only missed one. So he's 8 penalties. It's an incredible amount of penalties they've got.
Well, that's it. Like, and you know, the saying goes, if you're always pricking around the opponent's box, you're going to get more penalties than everybody else.
And I've said it before, I think it's more so as well the fact that the type of player they've got in the final third, I think of Connor Knight, I think of Billy O'Neill, really nippy, tricky players. Yeah. And it was O'Neill that won that penalty. Again, I think it was outside the box, whether it was even a foul or not, I'm not so sure, but he spun Sean Keogh. And Sean Keogh would be regarded, you know, as probably one of the best, if not the best, left back in the division. And he absolutely done him on the outside and then cut into the penalty area. So he's got himself into a position where he's forced Keogh to make a challenge. And look, he's got the rub of the green on that occasion. But I just think that with the type of players they have in the team, that they're going to get more penalties because they're just such tricky customers.
Absolutely. But look, they are dominating games as well. Not that they dominated this game in particular, but like, when you're spending all the time up there, you're going to get those decisions.
Dundalk, 19 shots, 10 on target, and they don't score.
Yeah, no, and as you mentioned, the keeper had an inspired night. Like, there was one there, I think, from Dean Ebbe, like,
yeah,
right on the line, and it kind of scoops it back, and well cleared then. So, like, it wasn't as if, like, Dundalk were totally useless. Far from it, like, they did create the chances, but I think when you add up the just a lucky night in addition to the keeper having an inspired performance, those results are going to happen. You know, it could be someone else the next time, just as handy.
Yeah. Treaty United 2, Cove 1. This is another one that I predicted as well. Treaty's excellent season for me continues.
Yeah, certainly they've been flying. Really, like, I know that there's always the shy talk about Treaty all the time, but the
36 scored in 23 games. It's very impressive.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But the full value for it.
Yeah,
a lot of those results, like, you'd be going, oh, they stole that or that, like that. I don't think you can say that too many times at all. Some really good performances, strong. Like, you look at, they haven't lost to Dundalk all season, have they?
No, nope.
I don't think so. No,
nope.
So yeah, they've been very solid. But yeah, there's another really good performance. I have to say though, the finishing was just sensational.
Yeah,
particularly the first goal,
brilliant.
Jesus Christ, like that is absolutely one of the goals of the season, because like how quickly the ball was coming in, and he has to get it on the half volley.
Connor Wilson.
Yes, I was going to say Mark Burma. He got the second one.
He got the second, yeah.
But yeah. Really good cross, but it was fired in up at his eye, up, let's say, at his shin, and he had to side foot it into the top corner. Sensational goal, and well worth the leading goal in the game. I thought, you know, Cove did okay. Did okay. They did create the chances, and it was a really good finish from was it Murphy?
Yeah.
To squeeze it in.
He missed a couple of good chances too.
Did indeed.
This is becoming a problem for them. When Dundalk slip up, they're not capitalizing.
No, it's exactly the same story as Derry and Shells last year.
And when you've shown a complete inability to put even lay a glove on Dundalk across three games, you know that's going to be fatal to your title chances.
100%.
If you're slipping up when they're slipping up,
you just can't compete.
Yeah,
there's no question about it.
What about Bray's only 6 points off the top? any chance they can keep the pace with the other two?
I think probably the measure of it will be when Bray play Cove next. You know, what you know, Cove can be got at, as we've seen. It was probably one of Longford's better. I know they stole a point from Cove, but like they still kept them back, if you know what I mean. There was Longford Town remained in the game and were able to get a point out of that even at the last minute. So I think there's a bit of, I don't want to say softness or something towards Cove, but like, are they going to be able to continue going until the end of the season with against Dundalk? I'm not 100% sure.
New owner's gone in there as well. Got the press release at 3 a.m. this morning to announce Cove's new American owners. So, yeah, another group of Americans in the league. It's incredible. We'll speak to another one of them very shortly, Nick Giannotti. But let's move on and look at UCD's result. They were 3-1 winners against Finn Harps. This UCD team are really starting to motor, Gaz.
Yep, definitely. The old pitch, I'm sure, helping them significantly. Great result for them. They're kind of getting it together, would you say?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of...
But they'd be the sort of team that they've gone about their business quietly under the radar. Come the playoffs, and I expect them to be there. Could they be the sort of team that would... Everyone will expect Cove and Bray, given the seasons they've had, to be the main players in the playoff. Someone like UCD come along and beat those teams and maybe end up in the playoff final.
Very possible. I'm not fully convinced just yet. I thought some of their play and their goals were very good, particularly the second one cuts inside on the left.
Smashes it really into the top corner. Caught the eye against Longford. I know John, when he was on last week, mentioned him as well.
Yeah. Like, they do have the ability, there's no question about it. But I'm not sure if they can get it all together, if you know what I mean. Give it a few weeks, maybe they'll be able to do a job, but I'm just not fully convinced yet.
Where are we now? Longford Town 3, Kerry FC 1.
Now you're talking.
We've been speaking about Kerry's regression over the last number of weeks. Not only the fact this is their fourth loss in a row, mm-hmm. but the goals they're conceding. I think it's 11 goals or something in their last three games. The goals they gave away in this game, absolutely, astonishingly bad.
Yeah. Look, obviously delighted from a Longford perspective. They went ahead and, you know, did put the goals in. But like, what was it, 3 minutes in, pressing from Stefan Obezia, the Longford player, on the... And it was like very lax.
Yeah.
You know, I'll pass it over here, I'll shovel it over here. And it was like, oh my God, I can't believe this player is pressing me. And got the ball off him very easily, down on the ground. And Ogbezia slots it home at the near post. You know, very easy stuff for Longford. I think Kerry probably aren't coached very well. What do you think of that? No?
Well... For me, that would be one of the poorer teams I've seen at Bishopsgate this season.
Yeah, no question. I didn't really like there was no
we spoke
memorable
about Cork,
player or anything like that. Like even
we spoke about Cork earlier on. Kerry are exactly the same. They'd need to score 4 or 5 to win a game the way they're playing at the minute.
Yeah, no, they're cat, absolutely cat. Even though
we were disappointed when we arrived, we were looking at the team sheet and we had obviously spoken about the goalkeeper being maybe something that a player that could be targeted, Heimer.
Yep.
He was dropped and Rand Romani came in, a lad that was on the bench a couple of times in the Champions League for PSG.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, he had a nightmare game. Now he didn't get much help from the lads in front of him, but...
No, but even I found, like, I'll say, it's nearly... I thought there was a bit of arrogance in him. To be quite honest, some of the passing that he was making, it was like I've been on the bench at PSG and now I'm here in Longford type idea. Like some of the passing was really lax, and it was like the players that he was passing that just weren't ready for it or didn't really want it. Yeah. If that makes sense.
And yeah, you're right. They did not look well organized or well drilled.
Exactly. And that's like, it was like, we get this keeper in, he knows what he's doing. We don't have to really play with him or train with him. And next thing you know, he's doing these passes and stuff like that. And it's kind of a bit, to me, to you, job, I don't want this ball. I shouldn't be getting this ball. This is a bad pass. And I'm already under pressure. Yeah, it's not. I think you said it right. The regression of Kerry has not been good this season.
The one positive for them though was the new man up front, Robbie Cleary, who's on loan from Salford. He scored a good goal. He hit the crossbar.
A really fantastic finish. He absolutely hammered it in. But that was really poor from Longford Town. That was straight from their own attack. Straight from back to front.
And
for Kerry.
Not only that, we had commented several times before that Cleary was catching the eye, he was lively, but he was becoming a little bit easy to read, that he always wanted to go on the inside, that he never always took Dean O'Shea on the outside, yeah. And he comes inside for the goal. So that was a little bit disappointing. But I mean, just to give Kerry a little bit of credit, they were terrible in the first half and then came out like a different team in the second half. They scored the goal, hit the
But they couldn't have been any worse, though.
Yeah, but still, they were well on top. And if that ball goes in off the bottom of the crossbar and it's 2-2, all of a sudden you're looking at Kerry thinking, geez, they have the momentum now. So, but the problem is that the goals they give away, for anyone that didn't see the goal where the keeper kicks it straight at Bezier and he just taps it into an empty net.
Yeah.
Even when you're on top and having dominant spells, if you don't take the chances, you know pretty much you're more than likely going to concede because your defence is just all over the place. So, yeah, very, very... very poor performance from Kerry on Saturday night.
Yeah, there's no question about it. They didn't deserve anything from the game.
No.
As you said, like I thought Cleary was good, but also I felt that Kerry were giving away a lot of fouls.
The basics of the game, they give away a lot of fouls on the edge of Longford's area, like just losing all
pressure. Releasing the pressure.
Letting Longford out. And how many times was Okwute and other players caught offside in wide areas?
Gee, I think it was 4 or 5 times in the first half alone Kerry were caught. Like, that's unacceptable. Like, they can't...
Because we were talking on commentary about him that, like, you're looking at him nearly needing to step up and score a few goals without Kelleher. And he would be a threat if he could stay onside.
Yeah, no.
And he also throws himself to the ground too easily as well.
Yeah, and the ref, to be fair, who didn't have a great night at the office... did get the measure of that, I found. I just wasn't interested in some of the stuff. There should have been a red card. Dean George was straight through on goal. Red card, like it was outside the box, but still a red card. And also, just remember that offside for Darren Murtha?
Yeah, he was on it. Seen the still back. Yeah,
yeah. And that, just to hammer home the point, there was a player on the penalty box line, and Darren Murtha was in the D.
Yeah.
Like there's, you know...
And that would have been...
A mile of space.
A lovely goal from keeper all the way up. It was
class. It was actually a lovely bit of play and like a really nice disguised pass to slip him in, wide open, no one near him. And thwarted by a brutal offside call, which is disappointing.
Only one loss in their last six now, Longford. We've been talking about the gradual improvements and they're up to seventh now. They're 8 points off the playoffs. I think they're too far back to challenge, to be honest.
Not at all.
If you gave Longford a sixth or seventh place finish earlier in the year, I'm sure they would have taken it. So there is signs of revival there, which is good. Finally, Wexford 0, Athlone Town 0, a result that both teams will be disappointed with, I think.
I think so as well. I don't know where it's going to turn for Athlone, really. Like, you know, maybe now that they have the new owner, but... unless he can go out and score a hat-trick every game, I don't think that's going to make much of a difference in the short term. I think probably the bigger issue is that a draw at home for Wexford against a team that you kind of want to be, or you need to be beaten if you're going to challenge for a playoff spot. And I guess kind of, I know I was saying there that Longford could sneak into a playoff, fingers crossed, but it's kind of, there's a gap kind of opening there. It's the top five and the bottom five at the minute.
Yeah.
And based on current form, I'd say nearly Longford are probably the form team to get into sixth. Whether that lasts for the rest of the season is obviously a completely different story. But it's very hard to see how Wexford keep that process as well. It hasn't been a good season for them.
No, not at all.
Really, really not. Like, you know, particularly all the fanfare and excitement at the start of the season. I don't see, you know, we saw a couple of years ago, you know, the shite start to the season and they pull it out with a fire and get into the playoffs. I don't see a similar occurrence this season.
No, not unless there's serious activity in the window. Yeah, so look, at Lone, it's been a struggle on the pitch for them, certainly. There's been lots of headlines about them off the pitch over the last few years as well. The man hoping to steady the ship there is Nick Giannotti. He's the new chairman of Athlone Town and his group, Red Ball Energy, also acquired a 50% share in Larne earlier this week as well. So we're going to speak to the man himself, Nick Giannotti, who joins us now on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Now, I am absolutely delighted to say, joining us all the way from Washington, D.C., just a couple of blocks from the White House, is Nick Giannotti, the new chairman of Athlone Town Football Club. Nick, an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. I suppose I've done quite a few of these interviews in the last couple of years with overseas investors coming into the League of Ireland. Some have lasted longer than others, but the first question I always ask is why? Why Athlone Town? Why the League of Ireland?
Because I'm crazy. No, I'm just kidding, Kieran. Listen, hopefully everybody understands that I'm having a joke there. Listen, I fell in love with Athlone Town when I came. Spent a really good time chatting with people about the club, following the club before my first visit to Athlone. It's a great community. It's right in the heart of Ireland, which really, really makes it accessible. It's much more accessible, but then Plymouth, for Plymouth Argyle that I'm involved with when it comes to traveling to the UK. But so, you know, that helps. And it's also a short little flight over to Plymouth from to Newquay. So there's lots of things that made it good for me. I've fallen in love with our style of play on the women's side. That's very, very exciting to me. And being able to support a women's organization in that sense is really important to me. So being able to find this gem, diamond in the rough, however you'd like to call it, actually is really, really good. And the men's team, it'll be on the up. I mean, we're sitting at the bottom of the table now, but I've got a really good partner in Ian Ryan, who's stepped up to be the manager. Was one of my first decisions, obviously, in the background, as we didn't announce until just a little over a week and a half ago. So those are some of the reasons.
Was there a prior relationship there with Ian? Because I think it was fairly well covered in the media here that if the takeover did go through, that Ian was going to be the man that was appointed. So were you advised to appoint Ian, or was there some sort of knowledge you had of him or an understanding that you had with him?
I had developed a relationship with Ian leading up to it. So I'd gotten a chance to get to know him before arriving in Athlone for my first visit. We had a very good relationship. It made sense for both parties. It wasn't a one-sided thing. I spoke with actually several other managers who I thought were all going to be very, very good for the club. But I didn't know if it was best for them to come to Athlone in the current state. So, but Ian was ready to jump on board and was willing to accept the mission, as some might say, with Mission Impossible, obviously, in the movie theaters now.
I mentioned earlier, I've spoken to quite a few investors in recent years on the show that have come in and got involved with League of Ireland clubs. Did you look at any other clubs before you decided to jump into Athlone? And again, just why do you think so many, particularly North American investors at the moment, are coming into the League of Ireland? What's the attraction?
To answer your first question, I looked at a couple of other clubs. And I just got a good understanding of them. But that was after I had first looked at Athlone and then decided to just focus here. Again, the women's game is important to me in this regard, to be able to promote the women's side. So it's something that's a little bit more challenging for us to do in Plymouth. So having the opportunity to do that was great. Yeah. And then listen, I think there's a big shift in the world and in global investing in sports. I think that there's a world of democratization of sports ownership and owning of things, that there's lots of wealth in the world, lots of people who have money. And in America in particular, sports organizations in America are very expensive to invest into. And they lose lots and lots of money. there are other, you know, and so I think that's very, very, from an investment perspective, Americans probably are not interested in doing that. It's a little more difficult. I know lots of club owners here in America, in the USL, and lots of people have asked me to get involved in lower league football in America. And I've just passed for various reasons. But the first and foremost, the financial aspect of it, it's very, very hard to run a sustainable football club in America.
I think, though, we would probably say the same here. I don't think there's too many clubs that I'm aware of that are running, certainly running profit anyway. I know they wouldn't be losing the same volume of money that the clubs in America across different sports would be. But the League of Ireland, it's big money to run a club these days. So, again, I suppose people are wondering what's in it for you.
Yeah, I mean, there's the numbers aren't as staggering. And the lift actually, in my opinion, isn't as big of a lift to get to sustainability. The problem is that there's lots of money splashing around in football and lots of people chasing dreams. That's both owners and players. So we have to be reasonable, and you have to set a budget. I'm a businessman. I've run sustainable businesses. I've always focused on running businesses with fundamentals. And I think that there's a place in Irish football to run it in a sustainable way. Wages aren't out of control like they are in places like England. I think you can, and by the way, Ireland is a great place for player pathways. People have, for years and years, have focused on Portugal, have focused on Belgium and Holland as pathways into the UK, for example. I believe that as the years go on, people might see that Ireland is a good place for that. There's already lots of American companies located in Ireland. Now, over the next few years, those companies might be under attack for being in Ireland under the current administration here in America, but I'm not too worried about it. Does that answer your question?
It does. I suppose the next question I have to ask you, because I've heard this situation that alone been discussed on other podcasts and on other forums, and some journalists have kind of floated the idea that maybe this isn't a takeover in the traditional sense. Can you give us any clarity on that, on the makeup of how you've gone about, I suppose, going into Athlone as chairman?
I don't know if a takeover in the traditional sense is the way that I think that there is. Any transition needs exactly that, right? It's not as easy as people think to when they step into a club. There's lots of, you know, and I say outsiders. There's so many things to be taken into consideration. There's things about being appointed directors of Companies House. There's being involved in, you know, having an EU representative. There's things like licensing that needs to come into play, especially when you have a women's team that's in the Champions League qualifiers.
Yeah.
Like ours. You don't want to mess any of that up. So it's one of those things that I've come in to provide the support, and it's been transitioned over me with with the help of having one person still involved. And so that way we keep all of those things like licensing and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
That's perfect. That answers that question. Earlier this week, the group that you're a part of, Red Ball Energy, acquired a 50% stake in Larne Football Club. And obviously, given both of Athlone and Larne are on the same island, can we expect to see collaboration between the two clubs? Is this a multi-club model now? Would that be a fair description?
So I will say this first for clarification for those listeners who are there. So Red Ball Energy is my solar company. That's one of the businesses that that I would say was born out of our family office here in America with my business partners. And we have obviously over the past 10 years, we've made investments in other companies, other clubs. And I'd say we invest in good people with good ideas and good markets. And so Red Ball, this is not affiliated necessarily with my solar company, is what I would say. There are investors, and I call it Club Red Ball, as one could say, is that there are many people who have participate with me. There are people who sponsor, people who partner with me in many different ways throughout that ecosystem. And so now we pass on that ecosystem to Larne. We pass on that system through with Plymouth Argyle. There's no similar structure of ownership with people. So me taking over Larne, controlling stake in Larne, we'll see who wants to come in with me on that, if anybody. Otherwise, it will just be me. And then in Athlone, the same thing. Lots of people are coming forward and wanting to get involved and partner with me there. I don't have a controlling stake in Plymouth Argyle, but I do have a vision to where it could be helpful for Plymouth Argyle to have places to take pathways for players, whether we have an academy. We announced this a while back, about 2 years ago, that we were investing £11 million into a Category 2 academy. And so, for example, I want those players to have a pathway to go play minutes once they've stepped out of the academy. But that's also up to the board of directors and the management of Plymouth Argyle if they want to do that. That decision is not on me. So it's not really a multi-club, if that makes any sense. It's just I'm affiliated with these clubs. And if everybody decides believes that they can be taken care of and also ensured a good playing time and to be showcased at each of those markets, let's say, because every market is different. Every league of football is different. But I wouldn't necessarily call it that way.
Yeah. Your name had been floating around for a couple of months, I suppose. I think that it was kind of well known that this may be in the offing with Athlone Town. But then there seemed to be a period where it looked like the deal was almost off. And then again, it was back on. What happened in those couple of months where it seemed to be on, off, stop, start?
I don't know if I would say that anything in particular. I think people just got ahead of themselves. When we made the decision finally, we just didn't announce it. Again, people need to understand and appreciate that there's lots of things that go on in the background with the FAI, with the Northern Irish Football League, with the EFL, making sure that all of those things are cleared and sorted. I don't think it was that there were sure there were times where it was stressful for people.
From your point of view, there was never a stage where it was off that you wanted to walk away.
I think there were plenty of times where people told me I was crazy to keep on. But but I think that there was always an intention of moving forward. And I think that was the same thing with the other with the prior directors and members as well.
You mentioned earlier it's been a difficult season for the men's team so far. They're glued to the bottom of the first division. Ian's come in and hasn't managed to pick up a first win yet in his first six games. But the transfer window is currently open in Ireland.
He has had three clean sheets though, Kieran. I will. I do want to point that out.
Well, then maybe that suggests that the defense is okay, but he might need some reinforcement in attack. Are you going to be able to give him some players in the window?
I mean, that's what we're looking at right now. We're evaluating bringing some players in. It's my full intention to use this as a trial period to see who comes in and who can create some of that attack. So I'm a former footballer myself when I was albeit a youth footballer. So I understand, and football isn't that much different than business either, right? If you're organized, then you can really attack a business opportunity. But you also have to have the tools in order to attack. And so I believe we're going to start to see those types of players that come in, and they may come in throughout the season because there might be players that are free agents. It's an interesting time of the year that since we're on the opposite schedule of most of the world, that players are on free and still looking out for some players too. And we're going to use this as a moment to see what we can do.
And I suppose the goal between now and the end of this season would be to try and not finish bottom, and as you said, just take some learnings from this season going into next. But the more medium to longer term vision for the men's team. I know you've spoken about that you don't want to be just another fly-by-night kind of owner, that you have a vision and a plan in place. And I know you spoke about, and you've spoke about it here as well, about the pathway and trying to develop that for players. But would you see in the next couple of years the Athlone men's team as a club that could compete for promotion?
I do. And it's with every intention that I have. I actually want to see us as a club that plays a level above. I want to see us leverage our smarts. I want us to see, I think the community has been let down for many, many years, and I think they're ready. They're rearing to get back. And get back to watching, a vibrant club in the Midlands, play football. I think we can get there, and it's my intention, whether it's to fill out the rest of the season and bring on some players that we can be prepared for the beginning of next season. It's hard to score goals, but it's also, I like to score, I want to score goals. I want it to make it exciting. But I'm also proud to, that Ian's come in and it's been very organized in the back, shutting people down. But I want to make the women's side a perennial powerhouse. My intention is to also talk with the other owners around the league and the FAI and to try to bring that level up in the women's game, because I think it's deserved. I think they can do it. And it won't be that big of a lift. It needs to be a priority. And if we can do that, then I think on the men's and women's side, I think we can have lots of success.
We will speak about the women's team before we go, because they've got an absolutely massive game coming up in the Champions League in a couple of weeks' time. But just one thing you mentioned there, it was going to be my next question for you. It's been a very difficult, probably, I would say, decade, if not more, for Athlone Town supporters. There's been a lot of hurt there. There's probably been a lot of bridges burnt. I know there's been fan protests and fan boycotts in recent years. How are you going to, as the new chairman, work to build back those relationships, not just with the current fan base, but with the community and the town of Athlone itself?
Actually, it, it just goes back to fundamentals. It goes back to basics, Kieran. And I imagine it's, you know, I don't want to be that harsh in saying that it's going back over a decade, but if that's the case, it is. I think it comes down to transparency, trust. It's showing that a caretaker is ready to progress it forward. Someone who's innovative, who's inspiring, and who's ready to lead and who wants to win. Now that doesn't mean to win at all costs. I'm not going to go splashing around, you know, 2 million euros on a striker. That's not the way that that's not the way that I do business, or take care of business. But I think it's about showing people in the community that we're going to be responsible stewards of the club. I think by the way of being able to financially support the club as I have over the last few months, hopefully that starts to come. Hopefully that starts to resonate already. I think we've already seen it. I mean, we've sold almost 400 tickets in the last, you know, 24-ish hours for the first match. We put it online Sunday morning.
To be clear, which game is that for your cup? For your next home league game?
No, for the Cardiff City.
Oh, for the women's game. Yeah, perfect.
Yeah. And so I think that excitement's already there. I've already had people reaching out to me from the community and to throw their support, whether it's in sponsorships, getting involved. Now, albeit there's also lots of people who have said, "Hey, listen, we've been let down. Here's what people told us," and it never came to fruition. So that trust and showing people, you know, that we're there to support, I think is, I think that will go a long way. I've had the privilege and pleasure of learning from what Simon Hallett has done at Plymouth Argyle for the last 8 or 9 years. and seeing what that club at Plymouth Argyle, what we've done there. And it's, even though we got relegated this year from the Championship to League One, we've done so many good things off the pitch, and I want to do those things off the pitch for the community too, because I think that if we do those, it won't be that hard to get this place on track.
I suppose just in terms of your role of trying to create that change in culture and environment there, we're speaking now, you're based in Washington, D.C. at the moment. I assume you're not going to be on the ground 24/7 or how regularly, I don't know, in Athlone. So will you be looking to bring somebody in to run the day-to-day operations of the football club?
I will be, yeah. So we've had some folks that have stepped up already and who have been helping out on the ground, boots on the ground. It would be unfair to name individuals when there's been so many who have stepped forward to help out. But it's been great, you know, just to name a few, like of the leadership team. Not to mention the coaches, like Colin and Ian have done a great job in maintaining things within the teams. But Gordon, Brett stepping up, and Eamon Cunningham, and then even leading through the transition, people who helped out just to sort some things and help make sure that things didn't go adrift. Has been really, really good.
Brilliant.
Yeah, but we'll have some people that are going to be coming in. Again, it's about finding the right people, Kieran.
Yeah.
You invest in the right people, and hope that they come along for the ride for the long term.
But look, Nick, you've been absolutely brilliant with your time. Just before I let you go, I want to talk about that women's game that's coming up at the end of the month.
Sure.
It's absolutely a fantastic occasion for Athlone. And of course, they won the league for the first time last season into the Champions League. So, you know, it's not every day you have Champions League football coming to any club, let alone coming to the Midlands as well. So it's a fantastic occasion, will be a fantastic occasion. And I know you spoke about it in your statement when you were announced as the new chairman. It's a great chance for you to showcase the club and the region of Athlone as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, I'm super excited about it. And I think that the ladies should be extremely proud about the opportunity that's in front of them. And the community should be very, very proud of what they've done, especially with all of the challenges that and the distrust the club that the fan base has in the community has had within it. But I mean, mere fact, it's one of the things that actually I find beautiful about the club is that through all of that adversity, you have these ladies who have just continued to blossom and who continue to work really, really hard and fire in all cylinders and play attacking football. They've been relentless all season. They've only let up 2 goals. I should knock on wood to not curse them or something like that, right? But I think I'm okay. I mean, they've been absolutely brilliant in that regard. And I'm very proud of them, and I'm very excited for them. And, you know, I'm ready at the wheel to help guide them through that storm.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. Look, well, it's great to hear the ticket sales are going well. So for our listeners that are in Athlone or the surrounding regions, the likes of Roscommon or Longford, if you want to head along to that, then you can get the tickets on the Athlone website, by the sound of things. So, Nick, once again, you've been fabulous with your time. Thanks so much. And I wish you all the best. I really hope we're speaking again in about 5 years' time on the show.
Would happily do that. And Kieran, do me a favor and listen, this is not just about Athlone Town performing in the Champions League. This is for everybody in Ireland. So hopefully, especially women's football fans, if they're, you know, getting them out to support the club, supporting women's football, not just in the Champions League, but as we continue through to finish out the rest of the season, whether it's at Athlone Town or anywhere else, people should come out and support. It's one of those things that we should get behind and be proud of, you know, champions of Ireland, right?
Very much so. Nick, once again, thanks so much for your time.
Hey, thank you, Kieran. Have a good day.
Are you enjoying the show? Please consider buying us a beer via our website betweenthestripes.net or head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BTSLOI. Thank you for your continued support of Between the Stripes.
Right, Gary, let's move into the Between the Stripes LOI Podcast Predictions League. And I have to say, you are giving us a real title race now all of a sudden.
Yup, all of it.
Top player again last week. 8 points on the board. You got 1 correct score. That was Waterford Cork. You got 5 correct results. So 8 points for you. Quite a poor performance from myself and LOI Ref Watch. He got 3. I got 4. So league table is like this. I'm bottom on 112. You're up to 129 now. Listeners, starting to just slow down out in front, 135. So a 6-point gap is all there is at the top of the table now.
I'll get my mother to do a few predictions and I'll reel them in a bit more.
So as I said, we're recording this a lot earlier in the week than usual, Monday night, and we only decided on that a few hours ago. So we were stuck for someone to play. So I've pulled my usual trick and I've just ran over to the in-laws' house. So right. Told you we'll get around the entire Lenton family. Yeah, David joins us, Dundalk fan, Dundalk season ticket holder. He's going to play for the listeners. And we'll start with Dundalk. I think this is the game, you'll probably agree, Gary, this is probably the game of the weekend in the FAI Cup. Dundalk against Sligo in Oriel on Friday night. David, no faith in the Lily Whites going 2-0 Sligo? I would have to agree with him.
I think so as well. I think what we've often said before about the gulf or the work that will say Dundalk will have to do it when they get promoted.
Yeah.
If they continue. I think there is just a massive gulf in class, and particularly with the additions that Sligo have made that you referenced earlier. I think it would be a good buzz for Sligo to get a bit of a run. I'm going to go for a 3-1 win to Sligo.
You're going 3-1 to Sligo. Yeah, of course, Ryan O'Kane going back to face his local club there, so that would be interesting.
Dundalk have not played anybody remotely at that level either. Do you know what I mean?
No.
This is going to be a real eye-opener, I think.
It's funny how, you know, a few weeks can change things. This draw came out first. People looked at it, Dundalk, top of the first division. They were probably unbeaten at the time when the draw came out. Sligo struggling down the bottom, and everyone thought, oh, this will be a real test of where Dundalk are. And over the last few weeks, they've been beaten a couple of times. Sligo have improved. And all of a sudden, I think most people expect Sligo to go up to Oriel and do a job on Dundalk. Dundalk playing a friendly tonight. It's just towards the end of it. They're playing Glebe North from the Leinster Senior League. And Dundalk are winning that game by 6-0. Among the goal scorers, McDade, TJ Malloy. They have a trialist in action. A couple of the subs have scored goals as well. They've got a few first-teamers out, but... yeah, it'll give them a little bit of a confidence boost, I suppose. But I'd have to go with a Sligo Rovers win here. I think the difference in the two divisions at the moment is stark. And yeah. I think Sligo will have too much for Dundalk. I'm going to go 2-0. I'm going to follow David. 2-0 Sligo.
Fair enough, yeah.
Harps against UCD.
I don't see much of a difference, really, from the last night. They'll have to do something different, obviously, where they were playing on a very nice pitch up in UCD and they'll be playing on a meadow in comparison. Don't really see it being much different of a scoreline, but I think it will be tighter. I'm going to go for 1-0 to UCD.
I'm going to go 2-1 to UCD there. I think I agree with you. David's going 1-1. He goes Harps to advance from the tie. So there you go. Kerry against Athlone.
Two teams that are
bottom two in the first division.
Yeah, but not going great either. Like terrible, terrible form at the moment. I think Athlone really have to look at this and go.
Were there slightly better signs about Athlone and Wexford? Dean Williams missed a couple of chances. They kept a clean sheet, which doesn't happen too often.
I know it's Kerry at home, though. I'm going to go for Kerry to advance. Do I have to give you a score?
Yeah.
1-1 in normal time and Kerry to advance on penalties.
Okay, I'm going to go 1-0 to Athlone. I think this might be it's a great opportunity for Ian Ryan to get his first win in charge. Treaty against Derry. Repeating the semi-final from a few years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it'll be a good occasion, but I think Derry will just have too much class. We were talking there.
David's gone 6-0 to Derry here.
Okay, I don't see that happening. But I do see a comfortable win for Derry. I'm going 3-0 to Derry.
Bit of flat track bullying going on here again. I go down the middle. He's gone 6, you've gone 3. I go 4-0.
Okay, fair enough.
So my plan was just to do all the League of Ireland v League of Ireland Cup ties. We're not going to do predictions for every single cup tie. But that would have just left it. They're the only four League of Ireland v League of Ireland. So we'll include Drogheda because they're the cup holders. They're playing Crumlin. And we're going to have Stevie Galvin on very shortly, the Castlebar manager, to find out a bit more about them. We'll do their game against Longford as well. So we'll just do the 6 fixtures this week. Drogheda against Crumlin. This is the game that Drogheda's season now hinges on, according to that statement that was released.
Yeah.
Will they have any issue here?
I can't see how they would. Obviously, it's a most simpler way, let's say, or more straightforward way to get back to Europe.
They've either been in Europe or are going to Europe in the next while. I think that they're taking a team holiday out in Salou to make up for everything that's gone on.
Oh, well, look, they have the time, you know.
That'll be after this. Games. Yeah, they don't play again until the 1st of August after this. So,
yeah.
I'd imagine be this game and then off to Dublin Airport.
Yeah, straight. Yeah, well, yeah, look, obviously a different context to that. Should have a few beers or whatever up by the pool in Barcelona. Hopefully it'll be nice and warm for them. I'll just go 3-0 to Drogheda.
Yeah. David goes 4-0 to Drogheda. I will go 2-0 to draw it here. And then Castlebar against Longford Town. Again, a bit like the Dundalk-Sligo game. When this tie was made, a lot of people would have looked at Longford at the time, bottom or second bottom of the division. Look, nobody really knows a whole pile about Castlebar. They play in the Mayo League. I don't think it's of the same level as the Leinster Senior League. I think the game they played yesterday, they won 13-14. And they seem to have handed out a few pacings like that recently. So I don't think it's a particularly high standard league they're playing in.
But they're still the best out of the lot of them.
Yeah. 100%. And they've obviously got a manager who we'll hear from shortly that played in the league. So that might count for something. But you look at Longford, they have improved over the last few weeks. That was a real confidence booster for them the other night. You'd be very, very disappointed if Longford go to Castlebar and don't advance to the next round.
Yeah, I think they have to do it. Like as we mentioned, like Longford have been very, their form has improved, obviously, in the last few weeks, winning some games, which is nice. And also, you know, not losing, which is also nice. So I would say that, look, you have to look at the levels. I'm going to go for a 2-0 win to Longford.
I'm going to go 3-0 to Longford. David going 2-0 to Longford as well. So let's go and hear from the Castlebar manager, Stevie Galvin. He speaks to us ahead of that cup tie, which is taking place on Sunday at 5 o'clock. Now, of course, it is FAI Cup second round weekend. And like we've done over the last couple of years on the show, we like to try and highlight some of the non-league clubs that are taking part in the early stages of the cup. And it makes sense to speak to Stevie Galvin, the manager of Castlebar Celtic. He'll be going up against his former club, Longford Town, in the second round of the Cup this weekend. Stevie, great to have you on. This must be a big occasion for you personally.
Yeah, thanks, Ciarán. Great to be on. Great to be asked. It's a long time since I played with Longford. Different lifetime now. It's 2002, 2003. But bring back some memories when the draw came up. But really, for us, it's just about this group and this team. And you know, we had a great win in the last round down in North End in Wexford. So and great to get league opposition into Castlebar and into the west of Ireland.
Yeah, I suppose probably you were just happy with a home draw, no matter who it was. But to get a league side coming to Castlebar, it's going to be a great occasion for the club to showcase their facilities and what you're all about down there.
Yeah, absolutely. The facilities, you know, it is a good setup. We've a lot of youth teams and it's got a great history. And yeah, I think it was good. It's a reward for the players, the committee, and everyone in the club. We've had a good couple of years. And you know, to get a league side at home, it'll be good for the town.
Now, a lot of the clubs obviously competing in the second round of the FAI Cup this weekend will either be a League of Ireland side or perhaps Leinster Senior League or Munster Senior League. Yeah. You're coming out of the Mayo League. What can you tell us about the Mayo League? I know you've already won the league with a couple of games to spare, but in terms of the Mayo League, how strong do you feel it is right now?
The Mayo League, it's a strong league. So I suppose just to gauge would be the Connacht Cup is the provincial cup. So you have the top teams in the junior leagues of Sligo, Galway, Roscommon, and Mayo will compete in that. So, you know, we're it is a tough league to win and at the level we're at, and every point you pick up in that league, you have to work for. But we've won the Connacht Cup the last 2 years, and to help us with that really is the opposition we're playing in Mayo every week. So it's a good gauge that, you know, we won a provincial a couple of provincial titles, and we're playing in our local league has definitely helped us out with that.
And the makeup of your squad, I'd imagine vast majority, if not all, local lads.
Yeah. They're all local or in the area. We've Dylan Edwards who's from Ballina, so it's only half an hour away. Niall Brennan, who's with us as well, he's from Sligo. But everyone else is in, living or working in the locality. Yeah.
Would any of the lads play the League of Ireland at any stage in their careers?
Yeah. So we've Jordan Loftus. He was with Finnhar. He was at Sligo. With academy, and he's in the squad, and he was in Finnhar. He got a couple of goals in the first division. He's a very good player. You know, we have Jason Hunt, who's unfortunately he's out injured at the minute. But Jason would have been in the academy in Sligo and kind of got as far as the first team squad as well. And we've got lots of guys like that who have been maybe with Sligo, or maybe played with Merv U and that. And they're out of academies. But listen, I think they're a bit better than just academy players. I think they're seasoned senior players, and they know to look after themselves.
And a challenge for a lot of the non-league teams going into this round of the Cup in recent years has been that they're out of season, but the Mayo season is quite active at the moment. So your preparation has probably been quite good going into this.
Yeah, it has, Kieran. It has. We just finished we've a couple of games left in the league, but we are in season, so that will help us. You know, we're well aware, you know, as a group, that there's different levels in football, and Longford, you know, we watched them a couple of times. We have a big challenge ahead of us, but you know, we feel we're in a good place, and we want to give as good account of ourselves as we can.
The mood in the Longford camp has probably changed slightly over the last couple of weeks since this draw was made. I think when the draw was made initially, they were away to Castlebar, a team going well in their own league, and a lot of people looked at it as a potential banana skin. But Longford have picked up a little bit of form in the last couple of weeks, so they will go into the game as favourites. But when the draw was made, is there a good belief in the squad that this is an upset that's very possible?
Like you said, I think Longford, I was just looking at the form in the first division. I mean, they're one of the form teams. Even Dundalk are top of the table. I think they've won two out of the last out of five. They've lost two and drawn one. Longford have won three, drawn one and lost one. So it's they have been competing well, and I suppose they look at this as a great chance to get into the third round, and rightly so. But yeah, listen, you always have to have a plan. Anything is possible in football, and we're not just going out just to make up the numbers. We're going to give it a right go.
And as we mentioned earlier, this is a great chance for Castlebar to showcase the entire club. Outside of the men's senior team, is there a lot of kids' teams, women's teams? Is it a big club?
Yeah, it is. I would like to be able to put numbers on it now, but it is. So it's a progressive club. They've underage teams from they have kickstart like an academy, under eights, under tens, and then they've got teams in boys and girls all the way up, and several teams at each age group. It's a progressive club. It offers a lot of football to a lot of kids in the town. I suppose the biggest problem that the club have is that we just have one pitch, you know, which is every team has to play on. We have an AstroTurf as well, but there's quite a lot of pressure on fixtures when you have, you know, 15 or 16 games every weekend trying to shuffle it around. But yeah, we're hoping maybe someone locally might be able to help us out in terms of facilities and that, but maybe, you know, councillors or something on the political side, the club are hoping that someone might come in and give the club a dig out, because they do so much good for the youth. And as I said, they are under pressure, and it would be nice if someone came in and gave the club a dig out.
And what's the enthusiasm like locally for this cup tie? Are you expecting a big crowd?
Yeah, we're hoping for a big crowd. I think, we're hoping for Longford to bring some, but I think it's exciting, because I suppose in Castlebar, we're an hour from Sligo, an hour from Galway in terms of two League of Ireland teams. You would have a certain amount of people who would take an interest and go there, but it's like, you know, it's League of Ireland proper coming to Castlebar. Listen, Mayo's a traditional GAA stronghold, but I think in the town there's a massive soccer tradition. And there's going to be huge interest in it, and we're hoping for a big crowd. Yeah,
brilliant. And obviously, there's a lot of talk at the moment about this new proposed third tier. Would that be something Castlebar might be interested in going into?
I'm not sure. I mean, that's for me, Castlebar would be a viable option in terms of the community is there, and the football kind of heritage and tradition is there. But I suppose, listen, you need any football club. You're going to that level, you need money. But it would be a viable option, but again, I think it comes down to financing, so I'd say that would be the biggest issue.
And again, just going back to your time with Longford, you were in the squad during its heydays, I suppose. Great times in the early noughties. So again, it'll be great memories for you, as much as you'll be focusing on getting the job done this weekend. It'll be a nice experience for you all the same.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I had a great time there. You know, when we went, first year we finished fourth in the first division, and then the following year we got promoted, and then I think the following year we played Bowes in the senior cup. We were beaten. That was Roddy Collins' team that did the double, but because they'd won the league, we qualified for Europe. And the following year I got to experience that as well, which is, you know, home and away in Europe, because there's a lot better players than me never got to experience playing in a senior cup final in Europe. So I'm fortunate that I had that experience.
Of course, that was Stephen Kenny's Longford Town team. Have you been in touch with the great man for any advice ahead of this? No,
I haven't. I haven't. No, obviously, Stephen, you know, brilliant manager, but no, I haven't. We're hoping if we get through, we might get him in the next round and I can have a chat with him.
Yeah, look, I can't say best of luck, Stevie, but yeah. All the same, look, I'm hoping it's going to be a fantastic occasion, a great chance for Mayo football to showcase itself. So I will wish you the very best luck.
Yeah. Thanks, Ciarán. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Stevie. Yeah, Stevie Gavin, I should say, of course. I think I introduced him as Stevie Gavin. Stevie Gavin, former Longford Town man. It'll be a nice occasion for him going up against his old club on Sunday in Castlebaron. It's good to hear that there's a big crowd both going up from Longford. And I think the locals are getting behind that game as well. So it should be a really good occasion. Hopefully the sunshine comes out for that one. Speaking of sunshine, European assignments coming up this week once again for Shelburne and Pats. I'm not sure how much sun Shells will get going up the road to Belfast, but Pats heading out to Lithuania. Have both teams left themselves a little bit vulnerable? They should have won by more, both teams, I think. Well, you were in Richmond. You can tell us about that game. But I was obviously watching Shells Linfield, and Linfield were absolutely rotten bad on the night, and Shells only won by a goal to nil. And you know, you were probably happy enough in the end that they just won the game, because Shells have been inefficient this year in front of goal. And again, they struggled to break down a very dogged Linfield team who barely crossed the halfway line. But they have to go up to Belfast now. We know what the atmosphere will be like up there. We don't really know what the atmosphere will be like in Lithuania. I think from all the reports I read, people weren't overly impressed with Helgeman. But again, 1-0, not a great scoreline to be bringing away from home, as much as it's good to have the advantage, of course.
Yeah, I watched Shells on Wednesday. I thought they were good enough. But I think the fact that they only managed to score once on the night was disappointing. Difficult place to go up the road. But maybe in terms of
atmosphere, etc., and everything that will come with it, but a lot of people reckon the bigger pitch will suit Shelburne. They dominated the ball the other night in Tolka on a pitch that had to be brought in. And this is something that should have been done years ago, by the way. We shouldn't have had to wait for UEFA to tell us that, oh, the perimeter wall in Tolka is too close to the pitch. Do you remember Paul O'Connor nearly?
I do, killed.
Yeah, so the pitch had to be brought in a little bit. There's a feeling the bigger pitch, you know, technical players like Ali Coote and Harry Wood, who were excellent the other night, and even Meepo having the space to run into, there's a feeling that that might suit them. But will Shells go up there and try and dominate the ball again, or are they going to sit in and look to play on the counter, do you think?
I think they'll just have to continue doing exactly what they did the other night. Like, there is a fitness gap in...
Will one game be enough for Linfield? Will Linfield come on massively from that game the other night?
God, no. God, no. I think that game will do them damage, I'd say. In the long run, I think it'll be
like, I was looking, sorry to cut across you, I was looking at their prep today for the first leg the other night, and like, aside from the Community Shield or whatever they call it up there against Dungannon, which they lost on penalties, they beat a team, I think, 7-1 in their friendly, and just playing very low level teams. Like, it's not an ideal preparation at all.
No, it's not. Like, you know, you're particularly like with the recent trauma that Shells have gone through, losing Duffer, you know, it doesn't help the situation. I know maybe it's a good thing that Duffer isn't there, you don't have to listen to his shite. But then on the other hand, you know, it's a manager that has been there for three and a half years and has molded that team together and won a league. Probably wouldn't have helped the preparations of Linfield either. I think they'll find it hard. But I think with the slenderest of advantages, Linfield will feel like, yeah, we could actually do something here. And while as unfit, or as, was it not unfit, but lack of match fitness that they had, they still managed to keep it to a 1-0 result. So they'll have to get something out of that.
The only way I see them getting back into it is through Shell's own stupidity. I mean, they almost conceded a ridiculous goal at the end the other night where Daniel Kelly... dribbling around in his own box and then pass it back to Conor Kearns when there's only like a 2-meter gap between the two of them. I mean, that was absolutely crazy stuff. But aside from that, I didn't realise until before the game the other night, I was just doing a bit of research on it, that Linfield lost their top goal scorer from last season to Cole Rain. That's very strange. You think of Linfield being the the big dominant beast up there, almost like Bayern Munich whenever there's a rival.
Higgins effect.
Yeah, you just go and sign whoever you're the best player is out of your rival's team, but that doesn't seem to be the case for Linfield. Now, Chris Shields will come back in, but he's going to have to cover an awful lot of grounds because Shell's absolutely dominated the midfield the other day. So I'd be hopeful like you that Shell will go up there and try and play their game and get on the ball and dominate the ball.
If they dominate the ball, I don't think Linfield will be able to live with them.
100%. Yeah. I'd be afraid if they sit in, just things could happen.
100%.
Tell us about Richmond the other night.
I was very disappointed with Shamrock, St. Pat's on the night. I thought Mace Amelia missed a heap of chances. It really does take away from it that you can only have two, you know, half the stadium open, which really took away from it. But I was that Hengelman crowd are not good.
Yeah,
not good. And it took a penalty to break the deadlock. There was a really good cross, like I think from Power early on in the first half, and Melia got a boot to it but couldn't just get it on target. And I was like, okay, here we go. These boys, my feeling was that Pat's like, we can get at these lads. These lads are shite. Let's go and press them and, you know, do a job. But that never really materialized. And as the first half went on, it kind of dissipated really. These lads are not good though, Hengelman. And I'm not saying like, would it be like Bowes and TNS or Longford and Carmarthen levels of bad, or even Derry and that team from Gibraltar last year?
Brunos.
But it would be shocking bad if they don't get out of this.
And that's how I'd feel about Shells too.
Yeah. It'd be a real mark on the league. Simply because I think Pats have it in them. And like, you know, you can talk about all the dominant possession and stuff like that, but like these lads are worse, or far worse than Linfield. You know, like even like I would say the clearances and stuff like that, all of them going out for throw-ins and slicing stuff, and you know, and then I looked at the league table, wherever they're from, was it Latvia?
Lithuania,
excuse me.
Second, I think, is it?
Second or third. Would you stop, lads? They seem to be under pressure at every single moment, which the more I talk about it, the more frustrating it is that Pat's only managed to score one goal, and it was a good penalty from Keane all the same, and it was a penalty. But just some of the chances missed, blasts and stuff over the bar by Media. I think there was one that he was about 12 yards out and smashes it over my head. I was behind the goal. Just not good enough, really. And now, like similar in the way, like, I think I'm going to go, well, Jesus, yeah, they only put one by us. Like, you know, there's that hope that you've given back to a team.
Yeah.
By not killing them. Hopefully, you know, this is a good week and everybody's shells and Pats come out of it alive.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be 100% certain.
We will wait and see. Before we go, we'll get through the hotline. It's quite short this week because we're recording a lot earlier in the week. Joe Cassidy of Flona, unfortunately, he sent this through after I had spoke to Nick, but he said, will you ask the new man at Athlone, will he hold a public meeting for the people of Athlone and the community? They haven't supported the team because of certain individuals at the club for many years, at a hotel, not the stadium, and introduced the new board members. And to be fair to Nick, he did speak, and he admitted, you know, there's obviously been a lot of hurt there, a lot of disconnect over the last couple of years, and he's adamant that he wants to fix that, which is good to hear. So we'll see how he plans about going about that. Elsewhere, we have got Sam Cork, genuinely awful. Nelson and Dykesdale, the only two who looked like they had any bit of quality. The supposed big names of Maguire and O'Sullivan, completely ineffective. Zaki, are you glad you got a new passport considering Longford Town are only 4 wins away from Europe? Cup fever. That boy's been going on about this cup tie for the last month solid. And Lee Conroy, will you still be commentating on Longford games now that you have a new bar? To be fair, we stayed disciplined on on Saturday, Gaz, and it wasn't easy in that heat either, I'll tell you.
Honest to God, those pints would have went down like a mother's milk. But yeah, no, I did. We stayed away. Yeah, no, it's great addition, and look, a great night for it. It was absolutely baking up in that gantry. My eyeballs were sweating, but great to get it, and you know, to be fair, fair play to Rockshore for bringing that to the league. Like, you know, you actually, I think you mentioned it on the pot or on commentary, like they've been a great addition, yeah, as a sponsor. So great to see.
100%. Geez, we should have mentioned at the top of the show, we weren't mentioned, but it was us. BTS was kind of referenced in the Oireachtas last week.
Oh yeah. Well, look, you know, we always say everybody listens all the time. But I didn't know that was a poll that was put up a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I know you have another one going at the minute, or is that finished as well?
Well, it's finished, and actually, so for anyone that has no idea what we're talking about, a couple of years ago, we ran a poll just about the level of piracy in regards to LOI TV, and I think something like 45% of the people at the
54.
Time, was it that high?
Yeah.
Said that they use a Fire Stick to access LOI TV. So I was interested to find out, because we were harping on for a solid year, if not more, on this pod, Gary, when we're talking about LOI TV, about one of the reasons people were doing the piracy option, aside from the fact, you know, saving money, was because they complained that LOI TV was too hard to navigate on the TV. You had to go plugging in HDMIs and all the rest, and that we were adamant, bring out an app, make it easy for people, and they will support it. So I launched a poll the other day, and I said, following up on our earlier tweet about LOI TV piracy, one of the major reasons many users gave for using illegal platforms to access LOI TV was the lack of an official app and general accessibility complaints. Be honest, since the LOI TV app was launched, are you using Fire Sticks / dodgy boxes less than before to watch LOI TV matches? 57% said, yes, I have an LOI TV pass. Just over 10% said they pay game by game. And 32% are still using the Fire Sticks. But that is a decrease, which is good to see.
Yeah, it is. Like, obviously, it's hard to be representative of the whole thing. Like, it is a podcast Twitter poll, so it's not as handy. But I will say, like,
but I think the thing is, it's not a survey, so people are, I think people are more inclined there to be honest.
Absolutely.
The only thing, yeah, some people, I'm sure you did this too, sometimes there's Twitter polls that I have no real interest in, but I want to see who's winning.
And yeah, thinking, yeah, yeah.
But I think most people that voted in that would have actually had a general, you know, proper answer. So
yeah, like the one thing, I use the apps. I have an LG television, and the app is brutal on it.
Oh really? Yeah.
After I launched that, I did get
a few messages from people saying that they pay for an LOI TV subscription but still use the stick because of reasons like that. So there's still work to be done. And the fact that there's a bit of proof there, again, it's only a Twitter poll as you said, but there seems to be indications there that these apps and making it more accessible has lowered the amount of piracy. So yes, it's in the league, LOI TV's interest to continue to develop the apps, the accessibility, the overall service, and the platform if they want to.
Yeah, just on that, like I say, I made two apps last year for the old LOI TV.
Mm.
Which I finished around the same time as the Premier Sport deal was announced. Like, my app development is shocking. But I did make an app for, people may remember Cody, and I made an app for that because I still use that. And it was very easy, like, give me some rope here. So, on Cody, like, everything's built, like, is menu based. Like, so no matter what you're using, if you're using YouTube through Cody or anything, it's all like just lists and stuff like that. So, like, it's very structured. It's very easy for me to go in, select First Division and see all the games that were being played that night and select one of them, and then go back out of that stream and select a different one. The apps are too slow for LOI TV. Way, way, way too slow. It has to be like, and just for anybody that has used a dodgy box, I have seen them in action. The streams are nippy. You know what I mean? You're into a stream, you're out of another one. You get the flat, you know, the score update on your phone. I'll be able to get into another stream to see that goal being booted in. If you have the remote in your hand, if you know what I'm saying, on the dodgy stick. Whereas on the LOI TV app, I know that's faster, right? It's more live than the dodgy stick, but it's too hard to get in and around those games. And we have a lot of I'd say a lot of the people that are fans of the league, and particularly podcast listeners, will be more of the Anorak League of Ireland fan, that they'd be happy to watch any game that's going, or if there's a few goals being scored, right, I'll stick that on for a little while, see what's going on there, and then maybe go to a different game. This needs to be almost instant, nearly like flicking through channels on your Serieview box or Serieview television. It's not that, and it needs to be vastly improved before that number goes down even further.
Okay. Yeah, well, look, happy to do our part for the country. So thanks for listening, everybody. That was Series 9, Episode 22 of Between the Stripes LOI podcast. We were brought to you by Quinn AV. Thanks to Nick Giannotti and to Stevie Gavin for joining us on the podcast. Check out the Members Club if you haven't done already. buymeacoffee.com/BTSLOI/membership. All our exclusive League of Ireland content can be found there. You can support the pod if you're enjoying what we're doing here by also heading over to Buy Me a Coffee, and you can buy us a virtual beer there. But for this week, from Kieran Burke, from Gary Riley, thanks for joining us, and enjoy Cup weekend. We'll see you next week to react.
Thanks for listening. Check out BetweenTheStripes.net for all your favourite BTS content in one place. See you all next week.